show about motorcycle road racing. My name is Jules Cusack. I'm here with Jim Race.
Hi, Jules. Hello.
It is episode 187, and this is Friday, July 24th. And we're going to be talking about the sausage ring, or Sachsen ring.
can you pronounce it like Bob does?
Der Sachsen ring. Whatever he says, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was quite the race. So, and really, we don't have that much news to talk about. You know, there's all the rumors with Lorenzo and going to Honda, and what that might look like if that happens. And there was a really great thread. I finally got my ass back in gear on reading, catching up on Ride On 2.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Oh my God, I miss the people there. Everybody has such incredible insights, and just reading like through the Stoner thread and the Lorenzo thread and the Lorenzo thread was really just kind of attached to, I think, one of the racing race threads, and just looking at all the photos, it was just really cool. I missed that place.
And it was cool having you get back in there too and add your stuff in, as well as all your awesome shots from Laguna. I hadn't really had a chance to look at them yet, so that was cool.
Yeah, it was fun. I got some good material again this year. That's, you know, some cost of being kicked around. Anyway,
that is
yeah. but you know, so the thing. Do you want to talk about the Lorenzo Honda thing? It's kind of interesting.
It's very interesting, and you know, there is news. It's kind of hanging on. The gist of the story is that Yamaha has made Jorge an offer, which it's my understanding he doesn't quite feels enough, whether or not he wants parity with Rossi, which I think is crazy.
Insane. Yep.
But whatever he wants, and Honda's made a better offer, and so Yamaha has said, we're not going to give you more, and so we're in kind of a limbo, aren't we?
Yeah, and you know, his contract runs out this year, so that's why this is such a big deal, like, because, you know, I think Honda... Well, obviously Yamaha likes Lorenzo because, you know, Rossi's not going to be around for forever. Although God knows how long he might be going for a long time. Who knows? And you know, and they want to have young talent there, to take over. And I mean, talk about young talent. There's Lorenzo's perfect. He's got the chops. He's got the sponsors, and he's got the P word.
The pedigree?
the personality.
Okay.
They want to hold on to him, I think, but they're also not going to get crazy. I mean, they're already having Rossi's salary to deal with every year. it's
sure.
Pretty much, you know. If they were Honda, I think they could probably afford another... Well, no, even Honda probably would not want to pay another Rossi.
Yeah, not right now. And
let's face it. I mean, Lorenzo, great. He's great, but he hasn't won a championship yet. I don't think Rossi has eight. You know, I'm sorry. So Lorenzo has those two, obviously.
Right.
But in the 250s, but he hasn't won one in MotoGP, and you know, he's won a bunch of races. And he's obviously incredibly talented, but you know, you just can't start that way. Rossi built his way up too.
Yeah, it is only his second year.
Yeah.
And I can't see him on a team, you know, regardless of what is said, I can't see him on a team with Pedrosa if Pedrosa stays. So
yeah, you know what? I don't understand that, because I almost feel like the whole conflict between Pedrosa and Jorge has been kind of manufactured by the Spanish media, because it just really played nicely into like a plot. Back in 2005,
like, that could be, but I mean, you do see a coldness between the two of them.
Well, now, like, you do. I think it's kind of like the story became true after it was written.
Could be,
you know.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, I think it's clear that when, or at least up until recently, when both of them have been doing well, that both of Rossi and Lorenzo have been doing well, that they seem to be real happy with each other. And get along much better than anybody suspected before, you know, the beginning of last year, at least.
Right. Yeah, I think everybody expected that Lorenzo's ego would make it impossible for him and and Rusty to get along, since Rusty already has the biggest ego out there, you know.
Yeah.
And somehow they did. I mean, I think that it took more effort from Lorenzo than Rossi, but Rossi is very friendly as long as he keeps beating Lorenzo. So
true. Yeah, that's very true. But you know, I mean, what I'd really like to see would be for him to stay with Yamaha, because off the top of my head, and I couldn't just pull this out. Maybe you know, you got a better mind for stats than I do. But can you remember the last time that the championship went down to the wire and both guys were on the same team?
No, wow. Well, I guess Doohan and Crevier.
Okay, yeah, but that was kind of a weird, you know. A weird deal. I suppose so.
And it was a very strange year because basically that was the only team that was winning races, you know.
True, yeah, yeah.
They didn't have much competition, whereas we have Stoner and Dovizioso, I mean, and Pedrosa.
Right.
This year, so. So the other thing is, like, you know, can Lorenzo really leave Yamaha behind? Wouldn't that be the stupidest thing to do, considering that it is by far the best bike on the grid this year?
Certainly, you know,
and it probably will continue to be a very good. It's a good bet that it's going to be a very competitive bike next year.
Yeah, I mean, can Lorenzo do for Honda what Rossi did for Yamaha?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I mean, like, you know, Lorenzo also has Burgess with him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yep. Lorenzo doesn't have that yet. Sorry, Rossi has Burgess, and Lorenzo gains a lot from having Rossi and Burgess developing this bike. You know,
absolutely, yeah.
So
I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, he's got trade-offs either way. You know, jumping for money traditionally hasn't always been the best move for the long term in MotoGP. So
I think the driving factor is the money, but if you think about it, there is more to it than that. I mean, like, he would like to be the top guy, which is why, you know, I think the kind of common knowledge secret, you know, thing that is that
spit it out.
You know, that they would that would run a special team for him. That it wouldn't be a Danny Pedrosa Jorge Lorenzo garage. It would be
the Telefonica.
Exactly.
Talked about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I don't think. And you're right about part of the manufacturer's stuff from the press, but I think David had written about how a lot of it was also enmity between Puig and Lorenzo's former.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Manager.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. It'll be interesting.
And they were just kids then, so you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so let's. And then I think that was the only real big story, right? Okay. Well, there was a BBC interview that unfortunately I did not get a chance to listen to yet, so I'm going to listen to it this week, and I'll talk about it next week that Martin sent in. Actually, a bunch of people sent it in.
Oh, yeah.
Which is 2 hours long, so there was no way I was going to be able to do it. There was no way I was going to be able to do it this week. So we'll talk about that next week, and let's talk about the race.
Okay.
Actually, let's talk about qualifying. You actually get to watch the entire qualifying. I unfortunately missed it and only got to watch the highlights. And the highlight reel is really boring because it's basically like they show you the crashes and they show you the people saying they're last. You don't get to see it in that timing, which is what makes qualifying so exciting this year.
Sure. And this one certainly did go down the wires. As everybody who's watched the races and the race weekend obviously knows, there was some pretty crazy weather that was going on, and Saturday was certainly no exception. And it was really hard pouring down during qualifying, at least for the GP boys. And I think there were maybe 9 or 10 crashes during that qualifying. But it was a classic one that we've had as time has gone on, and it seems like it's becoming more so this year. Maybe just, you know, recent memories are fonder. But it went right down to the wire, which is something you don't always see in super, super wet qualifying. You know, somebody might knock off a pretty good time, but in the end of ends, especially during all the carnage and chaos, which is a little crazy because you're going to have yellow flags all over the place, Rossi took the top spot on the last lap, even after the flag had been thrown, and he managed to sneak another last one in.
Right.
and it was fun. It was great. You know, he was.
Where was he before he got that last lap in?
Yeah, I believe he was second or third.
Okay, so he was on the front row anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in fact, Hayden spent probably 75 to 80% of that qualifying at the top. He was at the top the whole time.
Wow. And
you knew he was going to tumble down, figuratively speaking. but his crash that he had right at the end of that qualifying was
one
probably
of the weirdest crashes.
Yeah, he basically high-sided off his bike and did
he
a nice
flipped,
linebacker.
Right? He went flipped. He was upside down.
Flipped and did a kind of a linebacker tackle of Nicola Canepa, who was on the outside. He was trying to go inside of and took them both down. But that corner was getting everybody.
Yeah. I think they even had a clip of, I think it was turn 8, right?
I believe it, I want to say it was 8 or 13, but I think it was 8, yeah.
And I think there's MotoGP.com has like a little compilation where it's all basically the same thing. It's like a bike comes out into that corner and then crashes in some various different ways. And that, there was some crashes that were really scary where like the bike, you know, went to that air fence and then almost went back down on the riders and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Saxon, I have a feeling, is going to get reviewed, safety reviewed, because there was during the 250 race there was a crash where the bike ended up back out on the track after going across the gravel, hitting the air fence, and then going back out on the track and bringing with it a bunch of grass.
Yuck.
You know, which I think actually is what cut out Pasini.
Okay. Well, you know, so you look at this weekend, and I was a little surprised because this was not the most crash-filled weekend we've had so far this year.
It's not?
Nope.
What was?
Laguna.
Really?
Yeah, by either one or two. I think there were 13 or 14 crashes this weekend.
Well, there was certainly a lot during the race. That's true.
Yeah.
So if this is a...
This is semi unofficial count, but
because Vermeulen crashed twice. I think Jorge crashed twice in the same session. You know,
you had Nicky twice, Canepa three times, and Depuniet three times back to form. I'm sorry, that was me.
Are you talking about Laguna?
No, I'm talking. No, this time I'm talking about Germany.
Okay, sorry. Good. Yeah.
Your double crashers were Lorenzo and Vermeulen, and everybody else that did crash was ones. But it was almost, you know, it was well more than 2/3 of the field that went down.
Right.
So I'll send you.
You're going to send me something?
Yeah, I'll send you. There's a link. One of the people that participate at RedOn2.com is keeping a running crash tally.
Oh yes. That's right. I did see that.
It's
brilliant.
And so I've been kind of keeping an eye on that, and he updates it as the weekend goes along as well, too. So
that's fantastic. Here
nor there. If you look into the topic on Ride On 2 MotoGP forum, it says, how many times has Rossi crashed? There will be a link, I think, on page 3. Not for
sweet,
that.
Sweet, sweet. Okay. So anyway, the grid ended up being with Rossi on top, Lorenzo and Stoner. Huge surprise. But the big surprise, I think, was row 2, was Nicky Hayden got 4th, which is awesome. I mean, he likes this track, obviously.
Yep.
And then Alex De Angelis, who likes this track, was 5th. And Puignet, who's been doing a very good job qualifying on the second row quite a few races this year. Then Edwards was kind of a staple in the third row.
Lucky number 7.
Yep. Pedrosa, who I expected to do better during qualifying, but what was his deal during qualifying? Did he crash?
They've got the new motors. Both he and W have new motors, and I think they were just trying to get them dialed in because, he qualified, pretty bad.
Qualifying, part of the qualifying was wet. I mean, sorry, part of it was dry.
The beginning, I believe, yeah.
The very, very, very beginning. And they didn't get to set the times, really, because they were just kind of messing around. And then all of a sudden the rain came down.
Right.
It was like weird levels of rain. So some people got really lucky and some people got extremely unlucky.
Exactly.
I think Pedrosa was one of those unlucky guys.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that he even crashed this weekend, or certainly didn't crash during qualifying, I think. And yeah, he just got caught out. And, you know, it was kind of the same thing with Debbie, but the difference being in warm-up, Pedrosa was quickest, or second quickest, and consistent, real consistent. So anyway, moving on down the row.
Then we had Loris Capirossi, who, you know, I was kind of expecting a little bit better from Suzuki at a track like this. But we talked about, Bob and I talked about this last week, is that that hill in the back is actually really freaking steep before you get back on the straight,
yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And then and even though there's not a lot of straights where, like, a bike needs to open up its legs, I think the Suzuki probably struggled a little bit there. It probably struggled going into basically going uphill the whole front way.
True.
until you get to that right-hand corner where you plunge down. It was kind of a bummer, but Mika Kallio was next to him. Good to see him back. Good to see him that he was in decent form.
Yeah, I saw a picture of his finger.
I saw. Oh, ow.
Yeah, that's nasty. So good for Mika to even be out there. He had a custom glove, a three-fingered or four-fingered glove.
Right.
Two together.
Then we have Dovi. Obviously also was suffering from the same problems that Danny had. Vermeulen. Marco Melandri, kind of a bummer that he was way back there, but he made up for it in the race.
Certainly.
Toseland, who's definitely a staple back there. Canepa. That's not too bad for him, actually. And Gabo Tabashi was not last.
No, he wasn't.
It was Tony Elias at the worst of it. And
Tony did crash. Yeah, I think he had the one big crash.
Yeah, he had the really nasty crash where, like, the bike went into the air fence at turn eight,
yep.
And the bike almost landed on top of him.
But the bike, my understanding, was hardly damaged at all, which I thought was interesting.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's air fence, man. That's,
I know, that stuff is incredible.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool, and it was pretty straightforward, and certainly fun to watch. And
the fact that the two Yamahas were on top, and then doing warm up in the morning when it was dry, they were actually struggling.
Exactly.
I think a lot of people were. I mean, I remember I was thinking, like, man, they're going to have a long day. Burgess and Lorenzo's mechanics, because they. There was obviously something that they needed to do, which they obviously did.
Right, and warm up was dry. Let's make that point.
Right.
And so I think what a lot of people did is they warm ups are only 20 minutes, and probably took a stab at some things. You know, back to a dry setting, trying to make adjustments, figuring out what tires are going to use. We'll probably talk about that later.
Yeah.
But Pedrosa was right up there, Stoner there, and Debbie, who was 11th in qualifying, is all of a sudden in third. And these are not slow times they were running either, so bit of a surprise.
Yep. Okay, well, then we got to race time, and two things happened that we've always kind of expected. We haven't seen that too much of De Puigne crashing this year. Certainly not in the races. This was his first race crash, but he crashed.
Spectacularly.
Well, one of the most beautiful crashes in terms of, you know, colorful sparks.
Absolutely.
I don't know what the heck that bike was sliding on, but must have been reached the frame or the engine casing or something like that, because it was incredible amounts of sparks. I've never seen anything like it.
And I was pretty sure, as probably almost everybody was that was watching it, that or at least very briefly, that that was going to also take out Stoner. It was right there.
Yeah. That's right. He avoided it. Luckily, I don't think he had anything to do with actually avoiding it. Pedrosa had, of course, his rocket start, so he ended up, by the end of the first lap, he ended up in second place behind Rossi. So Rossi had a good start.
Remember who didn't?
Yeah.
His best qualifying of the year so far, Nicky Hayden in fourth, right?
Well, so I looked at that incident, quote, a few times. And I'm still not sure what happened, but it looked like he got his knee stuck under. Who was he next to?
I know what you're talking about. This is a frame sequence that Critter put up on Rhinon 2, but as it turns out, that's actually Stoner in the middle, and you can actually see Hayden way on the outside.
Okay. That's right.
And we know that Stoner got up to the front relatively quickly. So Hayden basically got stuck along the outside in turn one and fell back like probably, I don't know, eight spots.
Right.
And so he started in fourth and he ended up like back in 13th and had a whole lot to do all over again, which he did a fairly good job at.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I mean, he was back up to ninth by the end of the second lap.
Right.
Let's see what else was happening on the first lap. That's interesting. I guess nothing really. Dovi had a good start too. A bunch of riders basically like made up for the shitty qualifying right from the get go, and then the rest of them kind of stayed where they were.
Yeah.
Lorenzo did not have a great start, but he never really does actually. You know,
he's not a whole shot guy. It doesn't seem like yet.
He definitely warms up. Mm-hmm. And as the bike starts to lose fuel, he gets really, really good on it.
Well, in I believe they said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that he was out on the harder of the two compounds.
He was. You're right. Which is also definitely a big part of it. He had to take it easy because that's one of the things that caught out
Dubby.
That was the first right corner is where he crashed.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and not only that, but it's a corner where you're actually fairly light because you're coming down over a rise and there's a bit of a bump there too. So
right.
Triple trouble.
Yeah. And then we had a great race. Stoner led for a while. Rossi caught him and then Stoner didn't drift back because of physical issues, but he actually had a problem with his rear.
Mm-hmm.
And not his rear, but the rear of the bike. And so he did end up dropping off, but he was actually so he finished fourth, the race in fourth place, but he was actually pretty happy because he was able to make the distance, which is, you know, this is a what, 30 lap race,
right? Yeah,
30 lap race, and
his times did really fall off in the last five laps. So
they did. They did. I know.
And I remember when he pulled into his garage, first thing he did was get off and look at the back of his bike, and the camera
he was looking at it like as he was out there too.
See, I didn't notice.
Yeah, at least twice. Okay. Yeah, and then Pedrosa took advantage of that and passed him, and Pedrosa looked like for a while like there was a couple times where both him and Stoner got really close to Rossi and Lorenzo in the mid race, but then they got left behind, and Pedrosa again made a charge, got past Stoner. Because Stoner really started dropping off fast, but Pedrosa never could catch Lorenzo. Lorenzo and Rossi, on the other hand, had an incredible battle. Really good stuff.
It was kind of weird because Pedrosa would come up, he'd fall back, he'd come up, he'd fall back. And I know at least once I think he had an incident in the final turn that kind of probably bucked him out of his seat a little bit. But you're right. Rossi and Lorenzo at the front was the exact kind of battle that we've wanted. And, you know, it went down to the end. You didn't know what was going to happen until the end, and that's what we've wanted. And the finish of the race was less than was just a tick over a tenth of a second. So it was short.
Yeah. I mean, they were very Lorenzo almost. So he took a very interesting strategy, which was that he was doing basically the same line as Rossi the entire race, and he led a couple of laps. I mean, he led the last
26 through 28,
and then Rossi repassed him, and then he was basically doing the same line as Rossi, but on that last lap, when they went down a hill, he waited a lot longer to brake, and he tried to square it off because I think he was basically setting up for like a different kind of drive out,
right?
Like knowing that that's pretty much the only way he could beat him. It was actually a really good strategy, but the problem is that Rossi totally knew that he was going to do that, I think.
Yep.
And so he blocked them. And then if you look at the onboard shot, you actually see Lento's bike getting really close to Rossi and then backing off because he had to let off the throttle, and that killed his drive out. And he tried it again just before they went up the hill to the start and finish line. And again, Rossi blocked them. And this time Lorenzo, I think, knew it was coming, but there was just not enough tarmac left, you know?
Yeah, the start line and the finish line are at different places.
Exactly.
So it's basically right after you crest the hill,
right?
And there's no running it out. Maybe if the start and finish were the same line, the end result would have been different, but they aren't, and it isn't.
Yeah, you know, I am positive that Loretto had a better drive out, so he would have gotten the win if the thing was, you know, another 100 yards out. And it's very similar to what Gibernau did to Rossi back in like 2003, I think,
mm-hmm.
when he snuck a win past Rossi in the exact same place, pretty much the same way, he caught Rossi out. So that was kind of fun to watch. So I watched the race of the morning with my wife when it was live, and then we watched it again. Went to the Ace Cafe,
yeah,
which was packed.
Was it?
I've never seen it like it, and it was so exciting. I've never seen a race where so many people, where every single pass, no matter who it was, everybody was screaming, and
yeah,
it was
cool.
Really good. It was really.
I gotta get down there sometime then.
Oh yeah.
Sounds like you guys are always having fun over there, and people are always saying, why don't you come down? I'm like, it's 150 miles each way, but yeah, we'll have to see what happens if there's something that, well, you know, right now I've got a little bit extra free time. So.
Oh, God.
But I can't remember the last time that I was at an establishment watching a MotoGP race where there was a ton of fans. It'd be neat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not always like that. So yeah. I think a lot of people there already knew the results. They were just there to party together.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So let's see. So yeah. Pedrosa ended up in third and on the podium again.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him. He's getting it back. His teammate, on the other hand, had horrible problems with his front tire, and even I mean, he was falling back through the ranks like crazy.
Yep.
From you know, being at one point being, you know, in fourth place and close to the leaders.
Right.
You know, just totally falling off the pace. And let's see, what was he?
25. Lap 25.
Yeah, on lap 25. By that time, he was already like down 11th place.
Well, one of the onboard shots they showed.
Exactly. I was just going to say, go ahead.
You could just see the left side of his tire was just totally shagged.
It was just destroyed. Yeah. So he went in. I think they were even considering switching the tires, getting him back out there. But because there's not that many fallers, I think they decided, you know, it's not worth it.
And it's a short lap, too. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, and he wasn't the only one that had problems. Apparently, Pedrosa said he also had some,
mm-hmm.
But he said it came back to him, which I thought was kind of interesting. And at the time it was good because it came back to him about the same time as Casey started fading. So that was good because he may have just fallen back and started sparring with Casey instead and never even been able to stay close to those guys because he was pretty close in the end, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. One of the Alicia guys said that Callio also had the same problem with his front tire.
Yep.
And you could see him. He totally fell off the pace at the end. Absolutely. As well.
Absolutely, and that kind of harkens back to you'd thought that they might be defective. My train of thought was that they had to make such a sudden switch from wet to dry, and they never had a lot of dry time anyway, that some people took a stab at their front suspension settings and just didn't hit the mark, and that's the mark of a cold tear or a suspension problem as well. Hard to say.
Right, and actually this brings up a good point. There was one of the listeners, Cody Colliner, and I exchanged a couple of emails. This is a while ago, a few weeks ago. We were talking about qualifying and the fact that it's, you know, we don't have a qualifying tire now, but we certainly still have qualifying settings.
Right, absolutely.
Which definitely will chew up the tire to hell so that you still get only like 3 or 4 laps out of the quote-unquote qualifying setup, which includes the suspension and a softer tire. But the tire is basically a race tire, but it's just getting destroyed because it's just the way the bike is set up. It's just set up to take advantage of every piece of rubber that you got, and you know they probably want it at lower pressures and whatever else they can do. So so I think you're right. I think that absolutely. I mean, it's not like these guys got unlucky and they got a bad batch. I just think that they all made the same mistake, maybe too stiff or whatever. And that tire just got destroyed. I mean, it's a left-hand track, and you're spending so much time on the left side in this left-hand track that.
And they may have also been opting for a little bit colder temperatures because the clouds that were around in the beginning of that race, they didn't necessarily look threatening, but it looked like the sun could be staying off the circuit for a good portion of the race, which would cool everything down again. So, you know, I guess the answer is it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, you know, and I'm noticing here, oh, that's right. So at least on the lap chart, they don't score Kallio on lap 30, and I don't know if he pulled in. I know he got lapped, so maybe they don't count him on the last lap. That is kind of odd, though.
He definitely got a result.
Yeah,
because he got 2 points.
Yeah, right, but it's interesting. They just don't have the number 41. It's okay. It says lap rider, and they don't score him on the last lap, which makes sense.
Yeah,
because he's not going to finish his last lap because the race is over at that point. So
right, and there's going to be people running on this on the track.
We don't see lap riders that often, and so I usually don't notice that in the lap charts, so it was a little bit confusing.
Right. Both him and Talmacher got lapped.
Yep.
Actually, no, Kelly did not get lapped.
No, I think it was, yeah, I think
Talmacher got lapped.
Yeah, just Talmacher.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kelly was, he was pretty close to it, but I don't remember seeing him in the leader's eyesight, so.
No.
Yeah, all in all, it was a good race. It was, you know, it's going to take a lot to leap up to the standard that Barcelona set, but I'd still say it was a great race and, you know, thrilling finishing down to the end.
I think that Catalunya had a good, incredible finish.
Yeah.
An incredible, you know, everybody jumping out of their seats finish. But actually, I really enjoyed this race more.
Did you?
There was much more fighting between those two for much longer.
That's true. That's
you know,
true.
It was really only the last three laps that they fought in Catalunya. This was like, you know, 15 laps that these guys were on each other. So it was pretty cool.
And it was back and forth enough to make it, to
yeah,
keep it interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it you know, you could say, oh, well, there were only like, what, 4 passes at the front, which doesn't sound like a lot, but there were a lot of almost passes.
Right.
So, you know, enough feints and, you know, you could see. When Rossi was following him during that brief period of time, he was just, you know, sizing him up.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent, Lorenzo was doing the same thing when he was following Rossi up until he made his pass. And then it was, you know, it was warfare from the time Rossi passed him back in the last two laps.
And that was great because, I mean, everybody's always expecting Rossi to pass in, you know, the downhill section. And Rossi took Lorenzo at the end of the straight at turn one, and then Lorenzo tried the same thing with that crazy wide out, you know,
yeah,
which could have worked if that corner wasn't so goddamn long, you know?
Yeah, it was interesting because he did get a great drive out.
You did
that.
I know, but the thing is it just kept that corner keeps going a lot longer than you think.
Yeah,
before you flip it to the right, back to the right. If he had just been like a little bit less. If he had gone a little bit late, he wouldn't have gotten as deep. He may have been able to flip to the right on the inside of Rossi and gotten that drive out down to the bottom of the Omega.
Yeah,
the next one. And
yeah,
he may have had the lead at the Omega, but he went way too deep.
That would have been for an absolutely insane last lap because you know
I know exactly.
Rossi's going to try another pass somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not going to let somebody win if he's within even close to striking distance. So,
right.
You're right about that. There was more fighting for a longer period of time and more suspense for a longer period of time. So I certainly grant you that. Just another great race. It's stuff like this that's keeping me coming back for more.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there are a lot of people saying, oh, you know, World Superbike's more competitive. Well, it's really not. There's like 2 or 3 guys are going to be at the front of the same thing. It's great racing too right now, but as far as this race, this was a screamer. And like you said, nothing like being in a room full of a bunch of people, or of course at the track.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, so, you know, even the track is not quite the same. It's different atmosphere because people are drinking beer and, you know, paying attention.
That's
certain people anyway. So. Hey, let's just quickly run down the standings. So Stoner was fourth, off the podium, but happy because it was the bike's fault, not his condition.
Yep.
So hopefully this is the end of his physical issues, which would be fantastic. DeAngelis was fifth, which was the best he finished, obviously, by far this year. Mm-hmm. He had 1/4 last year, obviously, at Mugello, but this year he's been doing terrible, so this was good for him. I don't think he's going to save his seat in the team, but still.
Then the amazing comeback kid, it's time to sign a new contract if I get lucky guy.
Number six, you mean?
Yeah.
The sixth guy, Tony Elias, yeah, who started last.
And finished sixth.
And he really was an audacious passer this race.
He didn't look out of control, though.
That's true.
Riding his butt off.
Yep.
It was fun to watch.
I wish we could see more of it because I think we only got to see him maybe like three times doing passes.
Yeah.
He obviously did a great job there. Melandri finished seventh, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of track I want to see him finish better at because it's, when we go to Brno, he's going to be screwed. Then we had Nicky Hayden, which I guess, we were hoping for better. I think everybody was hoping for better, but you know what? It's not bad.
Nope, not bad at all.
He's getting better. He's getting better.
I've kind of backpedaled on this a little bit, but if he had had a better start, I think he would have been, he might have gotten a fifth.
Yeah, I agree.
So top five would have been great, but even so, eighth, it pulled him up a little bit, and Melandri's finished in seventh, pulled him. He's ahead of Dovey.
Yeah, I know. Well, Dovey hasn't finished a race in three races.
Right, but he's still ahead of Dovey. If you had to ask anybody where Melandri was going to be at this point in the season right now at the beginning of the year.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like Sete Gimeno and Marco Melandri fighting for 17th,
No, he's still the story of the year right now.
Then we had Edwards and Toseland, but I don't know if we even got to see Edwards that much.
I don't remember seeing any of it, and I think there was only a brief period of time where they were actually close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, they finished 11 seconds apart,
and so
I don't think there was ever a chance for them to battle. But it would have been epic if he'd been there.
Yeah,
I could see Colin's eyes bugging out, James looking like I don't know.
He did get black flagged, so yay.
Yeah.
Caparossi, kind of a bummer, 11th. Canepa, 12th. That was pretty surprising. He finished in front of Vermeulen and Kallio, but Kallio had that problem with the front tire. And we don't know Tamachi. I mean, Tamachi is basically, it was his first point in the championship, right. So hooray. But of course, he was still the last guy.
Right.
I mean, he would have gotten 2 points in Laguna if it stayed up.
Yeah.
And been the last guy.
He was happy about it. And,
the most important thing, is that he was competitive during free practice and qualifying. During the race, he did fall back because I think he was about 20 seconds back or 15 seconds back from Kallio, something like that.
But, I mean, even so, he finished. He got some points. He seemed to be happy with that. You still wonder what Scott's going to be doing next year but if there's enough money coming in through his Hungarian sponsors, maybe they'll just be able to build it up, do a little bit more work, maybe build up the team as well.
Yeah.
And then Devi, he'd gone out with a tire at lap 25.
Right.
And RDP went out with a tire on lap one.
Nice.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
It was good. And I mean, we have Donington coming up this weekend, so
it's double weekend, both World Superbike and MotoGP. So
that's right. World Superbike is going to be at Brno.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, because we follow on pretty quickly afterwards with MotoGP there too in August.
Right.
So I was just getting together my notes for this weekend and putting together my usual threads that I do, and looking at the weather for both, it looks like Donington should be dry on Friday, wet on Friday, dry for Saturday and Sunday, whereas it's the opposite for Brno. They're going to be dry on Friday and probably wet on both Saturday and Sunday. So we should have a bit of a mess. I can't remember what the surface and traction is like at Brno off the top of my head, but I know that there's been claimed issues at Donington, maybe some mythological ones about the planes dumping fuel or whatnot, but I think I've heard that debunked enough now. But yeah, it should be good. It's going to be a great weekend. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be fantastic. Last time at Donington, I think it's going to be – Rossi's going to definitely want – Rossi being the history setter that he wants to be, is going to want to win that last race at Donington. Lorenzo obviously is going to be, you know, gunning to beat Rossi again. We've got Pedrosa who's good there. We've got Stoner who's very good there. So we've got our top four guys are likely to do very well.
Yep.
And then, you know, we've got a lot of – I mean, Edwards is very good at Donington.
Well, you've also got guys that are desperate now.
Toseland.
Toseland's a great example because he was on his head here on lap one last year.
Yeah, he crashed, twice during that race?
Well, I know at least once. Can't remember if he did it twice. But, you know, this is not only his he may be gone already, he's got to get some sort of result, and trying to do it in front of the home fans would certainly be what he would want to give it a shot at.
Yeah.
It'll be a great weekend. I think Nick's also goes pretty well here, and it'll be interesting to see if he can continue. You know, like you said, he likes Sachsenring. He always liked the circuit. Laguna was his home track, so let's see if he can carry on his figuring things out onto Donington and move up. You know, it's kind of a desperation bid for Ducati in a way too. You know, a lot of their hopes are riding on Nicky right now, because if he can't figure the bike out, nobody's going to want to ride for them.
I know it's interesting that a championship winning bike with a bunch of races, you know, won even when it's not winning championships, is having, you know, I think it's just getting a bad rep. On the other hand, there's a lot of riders that are, you know, coming up from the lower classes that are being kind of linked to Ducati teams, and they're not quite that desperate yet, but I could totally see that, you know, somebody's going to have to figure this thing out. Like, last week we were talking about the fact that Pessini was linked with possibly taking over Canepa's ride.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first question is, like, why would they do that, you know? Why would he do that? Why would Pessini want to go on the one bike that is the career destroyer? But, you know, somebody's going to figure it out.
Let me ask you a question, because I postulated this in my head before and never really voiced it. Is it possible that any of these guys, I'm sure it's legal. It probably is legal. If I was a rider that was coming up and I had an opportunity to possibly ride on a Ducati, I'd say I want to test on the bike first. I want to see if I can even ride the thing, you know, because it seems like everybody that's got on them so far knew right off the bat that this was going to be hard.
Yeah, hard. You know what? I mean, I don't think that's possible. I think I don't think they'll let you take a lap on the bike.
Do you think it's your former team, or is it a FIM rule?
I don't think there's a rule like that in FIM. I think it's probably a contract deal thing.
I'd want to be on it. I'd want to ride it first.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be a smart thing for a guy with some clout.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, if it's going to be just some guy who, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of good riders in the 250s now that are, Pessini kind of walks the line there, because to me, he's not the top echelon of 250 guys yet. So he might not have enough clout, but somebody like Bautista, if he went to Ducati,
yeah.
If I were him, I would totally do that. I would say part of my contract is that during testing, I get to change my mind. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, have like a, you know, a 2 week clause that if it hates me or I hate it, then I can make another choice. Pacini's kind of in a weird way, though. He's on kind of a troubled team with financially, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. I think that's why he was being kind of like jumping on the chance of possibly replacing Canepa if Canepa got dropped.
Yeah, and I think it's Team Toth. They barely got together their money for this race and may have to do the same thing for the next one and hold on to those RSA bikes.
Yeah.
So that's drag. That's no fun.
And speaking of Aprilia, they made an announcement that they're entering Moto2.
I heard that.
That's nutty.
You know, as soon as I heard it, though, and I read some of the stuff about it, I'm like, that's brilliant. You know, Honda's going
to... Yeah, Honda's going to hate it.
Yeah,
I mean... They can't do anything about it.
They can't either. Yeah, if I was all the other manufacturers, you know who should be open to having a team? Kawasaki. Hello.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I mean, some of the manufacturers are going to initially be too proud to do it.
Yes. You know, yes.
We're going to race with a Honda engine. I think Aprilia is doing it, put a bit of a stamp on things, you know, because the 125s are going to eventually go away too, so they need to keep their foot in the MotoGP door, and maybe this is one of the ways they can do it. And I don't how many years is that engine contract for Moto2? Is it 2, 3, 4?
I'm sure it's at least 2.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be worth doing it. But I don't know, actually. I don't remember reading a number.
Well, I'll see if I can find out some info on that. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, Moto2's going to rock next year.
Oh, I know. It's so funny that, like, the things that I think everybody kind of was down on, like I'm over the tire war thing, you know.
I kind of given up.
Like, I basically have to admit that the racing is really good this year, and part of it is because their equipment is more even, you know. I mean, the two-tap Yamahas are the two-tap bikes, you know. They're racing against each other all the time, inches.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is I've learned to not continue railing once a rule change has been made, because it's not going to change back anytime soon.
Right, right.
So since this is it, I better get with the program if I want to, you know. I could go on and scream and yell, but it's not going to do any good, and let's just go forward.
Damn straight.
So, otherwise, I'd probably be freaking out about domestic racing right now. We won't even talk about that. It should be a great weekend. We'll see how that goes.
Sweet. Okay. Enjoy the races this weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks.